This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
This season, let your shoes do the talking. Designer Shoe Warehouse is packed with fresh styles that speak to your whole vibe without saying a word. From cool sneakers that look good with everything to easy sandals you'll want to wear on repeat, PSW has you covered. Find a shoe for every you from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, New Balance, and more. Head to your DSW store or visit DSW.com today.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Let's bring in Danny Cunningham on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. Danny's from the Locked On Cavs podcast, Inside Shot on Substack, Cleveland Magazine, 92.3 The Fan. Danny, good morning to you. Are the Cavs in trouble?
Good morning. I don't think so quite yet.
Good.
I think that there were a lot of things that went wrong last night. I think some of those things are fixable. I think some of those things are, you know, they just need to play better. They didn't shoot the basketball well. They gave up far too many open looks from beyond the arc. And I think that, you know, last night was an outlier, not in the fact that the Cavs had a poor shooting game, because that's going to happen, not in the fact that the Pacers had a great shooting game, but the fact that both of those things happened on the same night, I think, is really what the outlier is here. And obviously not an ideal thing for this team to be down one game to nothing after game one, but listen, they won 64 games. They're more than capable of winning the next four and winning this series in five games. I wouldn't necessarily expect that at this point, but they're a really good team. And I think all year when they've had their backs against the wall in whatever fashion they have, they've responded well for the most part. And I would expect that to be the same right now.
Danny, I echo the sentiments of everything you just said. But when I throw in this next sentence, seems like they are a little concerned about Darius Garland and his injury. What does that do to how you feel about the rest of the series?
It certainly changes things. When Kenny Atkinson told us on Saturday that Garland didn't practice Saturday, but went through a full contact, high intensity day on Friday at practice, I thought, okay, he's going to be good to go. And, you know, my understanding coming out of the Miami series is that they were not overly concerned about this injury. So I do think it is something that at the very least raises an eyebrow that he did not play in game number one. And I thought they really missed him. And I thought it was silly that there was this conversation going on about the Cavs being better because they beat a Miami team by 92 points that already had their vacation destinations picked out by the time the Cavs even got to South Beach for game three. I thought it was silly that the conversation was, oh, the Cavs are better without Darius Garland. In the same way a one-game sample size doesn't prove things in the other direction, but I thought they really missed him last night. The creation that he has offensively, the shot-making, being another elite three-point shooter on a night where nobody for the Cavs could make a three-point shot, I thought they really missed him in that game. I don't know if they win it without him, but you certainly feel better about their chances if they would have had him.
We got Danny Cunningham joining us here on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. So what do you expect for game two? How much usage does he get in? How do you take this?
For Garland or for the Cavs?
For Garland.
I think at this point, if he does not play, you become very, very concerned. I would expect him to be able to play. I would expect him to be able to play through this at this point. And if he is 100%, which nobody's 100% at this point in the playoffs, and I understand that, and I think everybody understands that, but I just think that they need him to maybe not play his full minutes load, but he needs to be able to give them something. Like, I thought Ty Jerome was okay last night, but if Ty Jerome's taking 20 shots in a playoff game, you're probably not in the best place. And I just think that they need more of what Darius Garland provides. If he's able to play, maybe it's not 35 minutes, but 25 minutes of Darius Garland would have been a big boost for them last night.
Yeah, Danny, one of my issues is, all right, you know Donovan's not going to shoot like that again, although he's been in a kind of a lengthy slump now from three, but it's not going to be 1 for 11. And, you know, he had a few right around the rim, one back iron. So I'm surprised how many blocks, how many times the Cavs got their three-point shot blocked yesterday. It just shows you a little more length here that you're dealing with. With all that said, 50 attempts from Mitchell and Ty for only 54 points. That's the height of inefficiency. And what also is happening when your guards are taking all those shots means other guys aren't getting in rhythm. So what is the big adjustment you think you might see from game one to game two?
I think one of the big adjustments would be to get Evan Mobley a little bit more involved. He was, I mean, Jared Allen was efficient too. I think he went 6 of 7, but I'm just not sure that this is a big Jared Allen series. I think this needs to be a much bigger Evan Mobley series. I think that if Darius Garland does not play, there's no way Evan Mobley should not at least be second in shot attempts on this team. I would expect that to be the case in game two. I think we'll see a little bit less Ty Jerome, a little bit more Evan Mobley. And I do think, actually, this is going to sound crazy because of how bad they shot the ball. I think they need to shoot a few more three-pointers. They only took 38 attempts, which is not where they want to be. They want to be closer to 45. What their average was in the postseason or in the regular season. Obviously, the game, the pace slows down a little bit in the regular season or in the postseason, even when you are facing a team like Indy that wants to run up and down the floor. There were still fewer possessions in last night's game than there were a regular season Cavs game and a regular season Pacers game, too. But I think that they need to take a few more three pointers. Like the fact that they went 9 of 38 and it wasn't their lowest percentage game was because the attempts were too low and they weren't doing a good enough job of generating those looks. So I think it's a combination of getting Evan Mobley more involved and getting other guys a little bit more involved too as far as three-point opportunities go.
Did they do everything that you might have been concerned about the Pacers? Did they do everything that you would be concerned about in game one? Is there like anything left that they could possibly bring out that you could see in this postseason?
I think that they're going to continue to push the tempo the way they did in the first quarter. And I thought the Cavs, like, it took them a little while to adjust to that tempo. And that was the thing I went into this series saying. The Cavs need to control the pace. Like, when they would struggle throughout the season, and they won 64 games, so it's not like they struggled a ton. But even in some games that they won against lesser teams, but it didn't always look pretty, they allowed their opponent to dictate the tempo at which the game was played. And I thought that in the first quarter, they allowed Indy to dictate the tempo, and that really set the tone for this game. And then in quarters 2, 3, and 4, the Cavs did a better job. They just couldn't really hit a shot from the outside. So I think that the Pacers are going to try and really, really push that in game two. But I also wonder, okay, you know, they shot over 50% from three. Andrew Nembhard, who has been, to his credit, a good shooter in the postseason, made 5 threes, which he has only done in one other game in his entire career. TJ McConnell hit a three, who's a 30% shooter that doesn't shoot threes. Like, there was a lot of variance stuff that I think Cavs look at and say, okay, what are the chances that that happens again? And that's not a thing you love to say, right? Like, that's not a plan, but I also think that's kind of the reality of the situation that we're in. I don't know that the Pacers are going to change a ton. I would imagine they want to play as physical as they did last night, and I think the Cavs need to step up the physicality, but I think the thing is they're going to want to get out and run a little bit more than they did last night.
Is there any chance the Cavaliers were caught a little bit off guard because they didn't take them seriously or as serious as they should? Because I was very surprised to hear them in postgame talking about pace, 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 when that's all we were talking about all week. How could we be talking about it, but they weren't necessarily ready for it?
No, because I think it's a really, really difficult thing to simulate in practice. And it was a thing that we were talking about, partially because at practice last week, every time, like everyone that spoke, whether it was Kenny Atkinson or a member of the team, everyone that spoke after practice last week before this series was asked some version of the question, so what do you think about the Pacers? And all of them, the very first thing they said was the pace they play at. So the Cavs are very aware of that. It's a really difficult thing to simulate until you see it. And going from a Miami team that plays slow to a week off before this series and then right into game action, where the Pacers are obviously going to be able to get to their pace easier because it's what they do, and having to find a way to match that, I think, was a struggle. I thought the Cavs adjusted well, and then they kind of got a little bit unlucky in the second half with it. But I don't think that it was a lack of focus or a lack of, you know, respect for the Pacers. I think it's a really, really difficult thing to simulate because you only have so many NBA caliber players in your program that can do that in practice. And you are at times relying on coaches to be scout team guys. And let's face it, coaches are coaches because they're not great NBA players anymore. And you can't really simulate that type of speed from guys that are not NBA players.
Danny Cunningham joining us on the show. So how do I get better minutes out of Isaac Okoro? Everybody's complaining about him last night. Yo, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I don't know that you do. Like, I thought he did a fine job defensively. But, guys, like, he's not going to be guarded. Go back and watch the 2 3-pointers that he took in this game. The one, Pascal Siakam, like, kind of threw his hand up in the air because he felt like Rick Carlisle would have yelled at him if he didn't pretend to close out. And then the other one, Andrew Nembhard, is the only guy on that side of the floor. And he's just kind of like, okay, whatever, and didn't even run at Okoro. Like, if he cannot make those shots, and that second one came with 6 minutes left in the fourth quarter, and the Cavs down by 2. Like, it was a really big shot, and the Cavs did a good job to generate a really good shot there, but they had the wrong guy taking it. Like, that is a thing that if Kenny's going to make an adjustment about the rotation and, you know, Darius potentially coming back certainly complicates this a little bit, but I think Isaac Okoro is the one that I don't know if there's a place for him in this series. He's a really good defender, but the Cavs need to have 5 guys on the floor that are going to be respected and guarded at all times by the Pacers in the series, and Okoro's just not going to be that.
Danny, last night there were some notable instances where some Cavs were on the floor in stark contrast between Series 1, which I called the least physical series in the NBA playoffs, in the first round. So, obviously, they were talking about it afterwards. Were they frustrated? Did they think any of it was dirty? Obviously, they didn't get the call with DeAndre Hunter even after the review. They were mad about that.
They were, I think, a little bit frustrated, not necessarily at the amount of physicality. Like, I think they have to adjust to that, and I think they'll be fine there. And I actually do think that if the series is allowed to be played as physical as it was last night, that's something that would benefit the Cavs in the long run rather than benefit the Pacers in the long run. That said, I think there was frustration that the DeAndre Hunter call was not overturned, considering Benedict Mathurin, yeah, got all ball up top, but he got him in like 4 other places before he got to the
basketball. Why wasn't it overturned?
I have no idea. I could not believe that call. I couldn't believe Jarrett Allen didn't get a foul call on the dunk over Miles Turner when Miles Turner two-hand extend shoved him in the chest. I could not believe a couple of those calls. And like, when those things are not called, and the one where Pascal Siakam missed a dunk and Evan Mobley like had his hand on his lower back, and that's a foul, and they called it a foul. But to call that a foul and then to not call the other things a foul, I think the Cavs have a little bit of a reason to be frustrated with how the game was called with those specific things. But I do think overall, if they're allowed to be as physical as last night's game was, I think the Cavs will up the physicality, and I think that'll be a thing that benefits them rather than the Pacers.
Do you think there's a chance, especially considering how many references to physicality that there were? Clearly, Atkinson hammered that home in the postgame speech to his team privately. Do you think we're going to see now the inverse in game 2? Do you think you're going to see a Cavs team that normally doesn't foul a ton? It's not like Evan Mobley is in foul trouble all that often. Do you think you could see the Cavs looking a lot more physical, almost an overreaction of sorts?
I think if there's an overreaction that they make, that would probably be the one. I do think that we could see them be much more physical. And listen, a lot of this is going to depend on when roughly 9 o'clock tomorrow morning when the officiating crew gets announced. Like, different guys call games in different ways. Last night's crew didn't want to call a ton. There were not a lot of free throws in that game. It could be very different when we get to Tuesday night in game 2. Like, it's going to depend there. And that's part of the thing. I guess it can be kind of frustrating for everybody is that at this time of year, different games are going to be called different ways by different officials. And last night, I think, was a result of that. It's not necessarily a good or bad thing. It's just a different thing. And I thought that the Cavs didn't necessarily rise to the level of physicality the Pacers played with. I thought that hurt them, and I would be surprised if that happens again in the series.
Well, I'll tell you what, though. It seems like nobody wants to call anything in this postseason. I know we barely noticed because it wasn't a competitive series against Miami, but that was one of the things that people were talking about. It's like, my God, there's a lot of There's a lot of letting them go ahead and play in this postseason with some of the other series going on.
Yeah, there has been. And last night, I think, took that to another level with some of those calls that weren't made that certainly impacted the Cavs. And listen, there were calls that the Pacers probably feel like they should have gotten to. This is a thing that goes both ways. It's never just, oh, the Cavs, you know, had three calls that didn't go their way, and that's why they lost their game. I'm sure the Pacers are mad that Tyrese Halliburton didn't get a foul call when he attempted a runner from the left wing and DeAndre Hunter had his hand on his hip. Like, these things do cut both ways. It's just that I think the most notable ones were the ones that impacted the Cavs and came in pretty big parts of this game.
Danny Cunningham, Inside Shot on Substack, Lock on Cavs, Cleveland Magazine, 92.3 The Fan. Danny, we thank you very much for the time. All the best.
Anytime, guys.
Danny Cunningham joining us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Studios. There is a very nefarious reason the music's going on. Don't turn away. Don't turn it off. Ladies and gentlemen, we have suspensions. Ladies and gentlemen, we got them.
Wait, let me be the first to say.
Do you want to be the first to say you don't even want me to mention this?
I want to be the first to say maybe they should rename this song Hail to the Cheaters. You hear that, Keith Britton? I'm sure I'm not the first to say that.
You're probably not.
You won't be the last. According to CEO Dan Wetzel, Michigan is expected to suspend Coach Sharon Moore 2 games during the 2025 season as a self-imposed punishment in the advanced scouting case, industry sources tell Dan Wetzel and Pete Thamel. But here's the kicker of it. Moore is expected to miss weeks 3 and 4 against Central Michigan and Nebraska. Okay. This would allow him to coach week 2 at Oklahoma, his alma mater and where he played offensive line.
Wait a second. Hold on. Yeah, he suspended 2 games. It's the first 2 games, right?
Yeah.
It's New Mexico.
Well, you would think so, but no.
Then at Oklahoma.
No. He's going to coach against the Lobos, and he's going to coach against Oklahoma. That's what he's going to do. And then he will say, oh, bye-bye. The Central Michigan thing is going to be too weird. Everything else we've seen, I don't know if...
The Stallions ball? Stallions
coaching that one.
Maybe I should have just canceled that game, but whatever.
Which team will Stallions represent?
And then he's not going to be at Nebraska, so the vaunted Matt Rhule, Sharon Moore standoff is not going to happen.
I'm getting Stallions on the call if I'm a network.
Oh, you are?
At doing that game.
Oh, okay.
He is going to be our sideline reporter. Which sideline? I don't know.
Stand him underneath the goal post.
He might be your row three reporter.
Yeah.
With binoculars.
So he's a... I mean, hey, Harry Carey was able to do it. Let's get Connor Steins as drunk as Harry Carey was. See whether or not he can do it.
Right, typically, when there is a suspension that goes into a season,
what's the
point? Beginning of the season is
They'll get around to it, Anthony. I don't know why what's you're getting so upset about it.
What is the point of it? What's the point of the suspension?
Why isn't it just,
can do nothing.
It's 2 games, but one quarter in 8 straight games. Yeah. We are going to selectively apply.
Why even suspend him at all? Why even do it at all? The NCAA can't do anything. What can they do? By the way, when Florio mentioned, we didn't get into this last week and I wanted to. Florio floated out there and goes, why doesn't Shador Sanders just go back to college? Can the NCAA stop him? I said the only thing that could really stop him would be the NFL. The NFL upholds all that stuff. It's not as much the NCAA as it is the NFL. The NFL kind of buoys college football in some way. But with this, like, who cares? Why would you even...
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Sometimes historic events suck. But what shouldn't suck is learning about history. I do that through storytelling. History That Doesn't Suck is a chart-topping history-telling podcast chronicling the epic story of America, decade by decade. Right now, I'm digging into the history of incredible infrastructure projects of the 1930s, including the Hoover Dam, the Empire State Building, the Golden Gate Bridge, and more. The promise is in the title, History That Doesn't Suck. Available on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Suspend him. You're putting a spotlight back on yourself. Just let him go. What am I missing? Could there be a lawsuit that the NCAA loses again against Michigan? Guys, this isn't 1997 anymore. This scandal is not a scandal. I know that everybody hates Michigan. Okay, fine. You can hate Michigan all you want, but we all know this. This is no longer the type of scandalous thing it used to be. If you and I were hosting in 1997 and this was going on, this would be... guys would lose their jobs.
So I do wonder.
I know that guys technically did lose their jobs. So like major heads of state in the NFL and college football would lose their jobs here. Like head coaches included. Like this is... No one who cares. What's the NCAA going to do?
I do wonder, because that was always with benefits. Anytime there were benefits, suspensions, or postseason bans because of benefits, we all kind of laughed because we knew. Anybody that followed the sport closely knew that everybody was getting something at the big programs, whether it was no-show jobs. They tried to mitigate it as much as they could, but you know, money was changing hands. And teams had plausible deniability.
I want to go back.
And it was just don't get caught.
And the players should want to go back too, because that means they wouldn't have to pay the tax on the thing.
Yeah, there was no taxes. So this was a cheating scandal. And you're saying not a scandal.
No, it's a scandal. It's a scandal. I still don't.
I didn't,
to what level of it?
I'm a Buckeye, and Kenny, from day one, I'm like, well, everybody steals signs. Obviously, this was the most sophisticated way of going about it. The problem is how the Michigan guys tried to cover up what was done. Like, had they have just admitted along the way, this is what we did, and we just didn't think that it was that big of a deal, okay, we'll take our punishment. They didn't do that. They lied. They lied about knowing Connor Stallions and the level at which he was, you know, passing around the information that he had. Obviously, how comprehensive a scandal and sophisticated a scandal it was when it came to cheating. That is something that they lied about. I mean, they lied, and Jim Harbaugh, you know, took off for the NFL because he knew it was going to be, once they kept investigating, once they couldn't put this thing to bed, it was going to look worse and worse and worse. And now think of all the self-imposed, you know, issues here, how Michigan had to deny everything at the start of it and how they keep tacking on, okay, we'll admit to this, we'll admit to this. It's a terrible look for the school. And, all I've ever wondered is, I'm a Buckeye fan. I'm in the bubble. So Buckeye fans are always going to put an asterisk by this title. What I want to know is, what is the rest of college football doing? Because the jokes are never going to end now. There's enough of a cloud that if a Michigan fan, like our boss, is in a mall in Oklahoma rocking Michigan gear, if somebody wanted to, they're gonna crack a joke. Oh, yeah, that title, that we're going to count. Just like the bubble title for LeBron, anybody brings up that title, they bring up the bubble.
You probably ain't going to like my answer. It's just, how can they do it without getting caught?
Okay.
Basically, it is.
I mean, I told you, I didn't think it was the biggest deal in the world.
Yeah, I know.
I think their actions afterwards to try to cover it up is what made it a bigger deal.
Well,
that's what happened to Jim Tressel. Did not get fired for TattooGate. It's that he lied about TattooGate.
Obviously. I think the major issue here was that. But ultimately, this isn't like it was. Like when Jim Tressel got in trouble, the NCAA had actual teeth. This, they have no teeth now. So they can gum you up all they want. What are they going to do? They lose every single legal battle they're in to the point where it's not even worth fighting. So you're doing that, what, just because you're a member institution that keeps up the NCAA and you want to keep it up for looks? And for them, like, hey, you did everything you could. You wanted to be at the football school again. You were the football school again. Don't sit there and apologize for anything. To me, that's like apologizing for it. You didn't. Sharon Moore, whatever, just move on. You did do something wrong, certainly. I almost said you didn't. No, you did do something wrong. But in this case, it's just, hey, move on. Move on. It's been 3 years since that scandal. We're going on to year three.
Do you feel better as a Buckeye today, Anthony Lima?
They feel better as a Buckeye because they just won the national championship.
Yeah. Had we not have won the title.
It'd be sad. What Lima would be saying right now is sad. But they won the title. They could say whatever they want.
So you're okay with them goofing on you for the...
Goofing on...
On Ohio State.
Even though
they're cheaters.
No, to me, Michigan, how when they don't make the playoff the following year, and now we've already got a more recent title than they do. I mean, you know, that was a great year for them.
Commencement speeches this weekend?
No, I didn't.
Oh, there you go.
I dreamed of seeing my team beat the Buckeyes. Not once, not twice, not three times, but four.
I don't have a name.
That was
on
the
him.
Commencement That's, speech. Yeah.
Is that their valedictorian?
At yes. Michigan, yes. And he whooped it up about Michigan beating Ohio State. What do you say to that, young man, huh?
I do feel like while Michigan had all the bragging rights a year ago, they went all out the window last year. After the playoff run, they go away. Like, yeah, you beat us. And then we won the title because the format's different
yeah,
now.
Yeah, after you win, it's
the
over.
Game, I hate to say it, the game is just not as important now.
It's not as important if you go and you do what Ohio State did. If you would have won the championship, it would still be very important.
Guys, Ohio State's going to go to the playoff every year now. So now it's about staying healthy. Now it's about staying healthy for the playoffs.
You can't say it wasn't important when your school was on, according to you, was on the verge and had plans in place that if they would have lost to Tennessee, Ryan Day would not be the head coach of them right now.
I sincerely believe that.
I'm not saying what you're saying is a lie.
But now that's
done. What you said was a lie.
But now that's done. Like, if Ryan Day lost to Michigan this year, guess what? They're going to be in the playoff. It's still going to be in the playoff.
That is true.
The format has forever changed how I'll look at that game, unfortunately.
But they were always in. Yeah, that's true. But I still think the significance of the game has changed in terms of making the playoff. Yes, there's a playoff. It's more important than it used to be. Than the game is, certainly. I think, though, what it does really become in earnest is that type of litmus test for whether or not you can find a reason to leave a coach you're not entirely satisfied with in the first place. I think the championship obviously calms everybody down about how good Ryan Day is, including myself. I thought that there were some things left to be desired with him. Turns out he was right. The players play for him. They love him. But I think that now, hey, if you lose it this year, if you lose the game this year, good God, that's five in a row, right? Five in a row.
That's unbelievable.
Which is, I would think, nearly impossible for an Ohio State team. And then if you don't win the national championship, you get bounced in the first round of the playoffs, okay, then that conversation starts all over
again. There'll be more pressure, yeah.
They can't lose it this year. They're not losing five in a row. Nah, this year they'll get it done.
It's in Ann Arbor.
I'm dead ass about that. Yeah. So they've won in Ann Arbor before. They'll win in Ann Arbor again. They'll win in Ann Arbor this year.
I do wonder if the monkey being off the back because of Day winning the title changes everything.
I wonder if they play looser in that game.
Yeah, he's not going to pucker up
like
he has because he could sit there and laugh with a championship ring.
Well, he can also think this game is not as important as it once was, right? Because you can just go win the national championship.
Well, I've said this. It's a great point. I have said that we've always done this teeter-totter. When Cooper was coaching, we all know, didn't take it seriously enough. Didn't understand it as part of the fabric of Ohio State history. Then Jim Tressel came in, and it was like, oh, this is the thing that matters. This is the jumping board. And then he wins a title in year two. This is the jumping off of what new Ohio State football is. Urban came in, had the best team, and they crushed them. They humiliated them, and it was revolving door coaches. And then I wondered if Ryan Day was like, everybody tell him, you know the Michigan game's big, right? You're an outsider. You're from the Northeast. What do you know about this? You know this is a big... And I think that permeated so much that Ryan Day almost took the Michigan game too seriously, which is hilarious to think coming from the Cooper years. Like, did you know there'd be a coach down the road that would put too much on the team for the Michigan game? And I think that's exactly what happened, and it puckered them up.
Would they have been able to beat Tennessee in the Fiesta Bowl?
In
98, yes. I'm sorry. Let me go back. Yeah. I had a whole conversation with myself before I actually brought it. Because I'm thinking, man, if John Cooper
would
have just beaten Michigan State in 98.
Yep.
And if they would have finished that wire to wire and then would have beaten, could they have beaten Tennessee in the Fiesta Bowl win the national championship?
The Michigan State game, growing up, I was young, wasn't in it like I am now.
Oh,
that Michigan State game to me was worse than all the Michigan ones. Because that was the team.
I remember listening to it.
That was the squad. That was the best Ohio State team.
My dad is not, he's not a big college football guy. We were listening to it, and my dad was shocked. Because we had to go somewhere. It was a family gathering. It's a Saturday night. And we're like leaving. I'm like, they're going, they're losing. I go, what? What? Because they didn't have TVs in every restaurant like they do now. Like you couldn't just figure, and plus no one had cell phones in. So nobody knew. And then, like, somebody said, yeah, they just came out from the car, like, smoking. I think one of my uncles or something like that. He's like, dude, they're losing. Huh? Yeah. What are you going to do? Back in the fan, Lima's accusing Mitch of piling on. You're accusing Mitch of piling on.
It's ridiculous. We sit here and we break down the game. We've done it all morning. We've had great calls. We have great reaction. I'm not sensing as much panic as maybe I thought we would get, because you treat the playoff games like they're football Sundays,
all
and
right.
after a loss, we overreact. But then I thought we were level-headed. Mitch comes in. He's got, I got audio from Brian Windhorst. I got audio from Kendrick Perkins. Got audio from Jay Williams ripping on the Cavs. And it's like, now all of a sudden, the Cavs that have been the darling all year, they lose one playoff game,
yep.
mind you. One. And
you
now
go.
It's a disaster. That's the end of the world.
Time to take off the gloves. Let's hear this Jay Williams audio first. This is Jay Williams from Get Up. Owen, you got it? All right, here it is. Go.
I am extremely concerned about the Cavs. Number one, Garland in that situation. And number two, defensively, you talk about one of the best teams defensively in the league. I mean, they just look uninterested in this game. I mean, for 19 threes to be made on 54% shooting, with all the narratives that have been looming around Cleveland throughout the entire year, I better see a different Cleveland team in game two. And I know they had a good layoff. And sometimes that layoff can disrupt your rhythm. But still, that's no excuses. I saw lazy defense. Donovan Mitchell, I think he is a superstar in this league. 33 points on 30 shots. You have two players that took 50 of their 98 shots. The second player was Ty Jerome, not showing up offensively, but defensively not being locked in. That was one of the most disappointing efforts that I've seen in the game one.
Okay, come on. This is I know we got to do something here, but Lord, I did not think that they took it very seriously to start things off. I think that they got punched in the face. I do think what Danny says, now you could take this as an excuse. I think it became much more palatable when Danny says, like, hey, man, it's going to be hard to replicate what the Pacers do after you just got off the Miami series. This is what Brian Windhorst had to say about the Cleveland Cavaliers, and this might explain a little bit more.
I will just say to you, and I'm not saying this just now, I've been saying this for a while, that internally, the Cavs were wary of the Pacers for weeks. Because remember, there was a while there where the Pistons, Pacers, and Bucks were all sort of tied. And the Pacers made that late season push. They finished 14-4 to get the 4 seed. When that was becoming apparent, the Cavs were giving them the side eye. Because that's a quasi bad matchup for the Cavs. I mean, they won 64 games. There isn't a team like, you know, that they feel like they're a quote unquote bad matchup against, but it's a more uncomfortable matchup.
All right, what do you take from that when you hear that? That's a courtesy of the Hoop Collective.
Well, as compared to what? Like,
well, because if they knew
matchup, I mean, all the teams are good this round of the playoffs.
If they knew going in, it's like, why didn't you hit the gas if you knew
right.
going in
the final two games?
They were going to be a little rough, yeah.
Yeah, because, right, like Owen, you said they lost those games.
Yeah.
They obviously were mailing those in.
Right.
They were more focused on
remember,
staying healthy.
They played them game 79, which had the Knicks won and the Pacers lost, and the Knicks would have been in this position or something. It would have flip-flopped them out with the Knicks somehow.
Yeah.
And then they basically played no one in game 82 and still almost beat them.
It is true that they are a difficult matchup. And it is true that also that I did not think they came out and they showed the type of aggression that they should have shown. That's all true and fair. I don't think there should be some gross overreaction. Now, find me on Wednesday morning. If they go out there and they look listless tomorrow night and they lose to the Indiana Pacers, then find me tomorrow night and we'll talk, or on Wednesday morning, we'll talk about it. Because as of right now, it's like, okay, hold on. Let's not go crazy here. I think that right now we have to batten down the hatches and understand that, yeah, you know what? You're probably in a series. When Brad Doherty had said at 9 o'clock on Friday that he thought it was going to be a 70 game series, it did it or did it not get your attention? It got my attention, and I purposefully did not make that big a deal about it afterwards because, hey, let's be honest, I wanted to get ready for game one. I want to have some fun. It's a Friday morning. I'm sitting there trying to scare everybody into the Indiana Pacers series. It was not my version of fun on Friday
morning.
Yeah, but
we warned everybody.
I respect Brad Doherty's opinion, obviously. I care very much for it, but Lord Almighty,
no,
I just didn't want to.
Yeah, you wanted
no,
to fight
I didn't
him.
Want to fight him on. I wasn't going to fight him on.
Well,
I just did not want to. I just wasn't going to give it a lot more air than. Maybe it needed more air. I just wasn't going to give it a lot because I wanted to have a good time. I didn't want to bog everybody down with concern before we start a series against Indiana on a Friday.
We did say that this was going to be the biggest step up in competition that any team would face.
Yes.
in the playoffs.
Yeah, one team that didn't care at all.
That's Miami's fault, though. That's right, not right. anything that the Cavs or the Pacers yeah. did.
And we felt good that we thought we were going to be pretty damn healthy. And then what do we find out right before the game? Oh, yeah, Darius Garland, not only is he not going to play, now the Cavs are all of a sudden worried about it. Like, well, that's different. Obviously, if we would have had that report from Jared Greenberg on Friday. Now, with that said, I'm not bailing on the series. I'm not bailing on the season. I don't think they're done. I don't think it's like they can't come out of this and be fine. Like, even Danny Cunningham's like, they could win the next four. Would you be stunned if they won the next four? I wouldn't be.
I'd actually be a little bit surprised they won really? The next four. Yeah. Josh and Berea, you're first up in the Fan. Hello.
Oh, yeah. I would be absolutely stunned if the Cavs won four in a row because I was someone, I could date it. I have the video when I called in. When we were saying, is Kobe Altman sleeping at the wheel after the Knicks got Mikal Bridges? And I said, I'm more scared of Indiana because that's a team that's been building just like how the Cavs have been building. While we were watching us, Indiana has been building a really good team. And expect a lot of those games to go down like that, getting close into the fourth quarter, and whoever has the best fourth quarter is going to win.
But you think we're better. No, that's... We are better, right, than the Pacers. You're not
we are. No, no, I still think we're going to win, yeah. but I went into the series saying Cavs in six. It's now Cavs in seven, guys. We're in for a series. Buckle up.
All right, Josh, thank you for the call.
Well, that's a question for tomorrow. How many games is this series going?
Oh, it's got to be Cavs in seven now, right?
No.
Do you know what the status of Darius Garland is and I don't? Is everything going to be hunky-dory? Did he wake up in the morning like Adam Banks today and everything was fine with the wrist? How does that happen? He has a serious wrist injury and he
District
wakes up and everything's
hockey's
fine.
A different animal.
I think old John Voight from Varsity Blues was visiting Adam Banks when the cameras weren't rolling. That's what I think what was going on. Yeah, you guys think Garden Bombay all of a sudden was just a good guy because he's hanging around with a bunch of kids, all right? Yeah, you guys think Duxworth was a bad guy. Guess what? Thanks, everybody, who joined us today. Danny Cunningham. Yes, sir, Mr. Duxworth. Right away, Mr. Duxworth.
Quack, quack, Mr. Atkinson.
Quack, quack, Mr. Duxworth.